Introduce yourself, please.
I'm Dee Dee from Dum Dum Girls.
I was 4 or 5 years old. I kind of knew I was going to be doing things like we're doing here, but I was shy as all get out. And I think your tale goes a little similar to that. Am I right in some way?
Yeah, definitely. I knew from a very young age I wanted to be doing something artistic and performance-based, but I was extremely shy and had terrible stage fright until I was probably 18, and it was just hard to reconcile knowing that that was, you know, what I wanted to do and not physically being able to do it.
Did I read that it really, and this was a quote that I read somewhere, that you were literally age 4, but you still said to yourself, I want to be a singer?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I used to record songs, you know, just singing on cassette tapes. We're a very cassette tape-oriented family. We had, you know, little portable recording machines all over the place. We liked to document things. And so I've found tapes of these weird songs that I had recorded as a preschooler.
One of the things that was kind of interesting is that you did perform. I mean, you were in choir, but being in a, and I understand this really well too, being in a group of people versus leading a group is a whole different ball game, right?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, the whole point of choir is voices blending together, and so, you know, I learned a lot musicianship wise from that experience, and it's why I, you know, write songs that incorporate harmonies. That's one of my favorite things to do. But yeah, very different being a member of a group and, you know, striking out on your own and writing your own songs and deciding to lead others in performing them.
Yeah, and speaking of the lead thing, I mean, you very much are the leader of the band, but you also did make a decision not to be the human being that's playing the hotel cafe and sitting there and strumming your guitar and strumming songs. You chose to be in a band, right?
Definitely. I mean, this project started as nothing serious. It was just, you know, basically me documenting, learning how to play guitar, learning how to write songs. All of the first Dum Dum Girls songs are, you know, a handful of the first songs I'd ever successfully written on the guitar. And I just did that long enough that I amassed, you know, an album's worth of songs. And then upon signing with Sub Pop, you know, I had been doing it casually and as a solo thing, just, you know, on the music side of things. No shows, you know, no band members, nothing visual associated with the music. And I finally warmed back up to the idea of a band because I was not interested in that when I started. I really was tired of, you know, having to work with people that maybe, you know, you're not on the same page with, and you wonder, like, how did I end up playing music with them? You know, like having to compromise stylistically or, you know, whatever. And so when I started this, it was really liberating to not have to tailor what I wanted to do to anybody else's input or opinions. And, you know, sure, maybe I could do things better if I had people to bounce ideas off of, but I was not interested in that at all. I wanted to control, like, every aspect of it. But again, I did that for long enough, and then the idea of, you know, putting a band together where I still, you know, was pretty selective with who I picked just to make sure that I was going to be working with good people that, you know, would be good friends, and it wouldn't be some, you know, dramatic situation, you know, because I anticipated touring a lot, and, you know, for the 30 minutes you play a show, you're living with these people basically for, you know, the other 23 hours and 30 minutes. So
I love it. You know what, it's funny the way you said that, because you said the 30 minutes you play a show, which of course does say a lot about your music. You know, you really did start in a DIY. I hate the term DIY. So you started, and I hate the term organic. I hate all these terms that always come into questions like this. But you put out 7-inch singles, yep. Right? You really kind of did it very, very, not casually, I mean smartly, and then Sub Pop somehow came into your life.
Actually, the first thing I ever put out as a Dum Dum Girls release came out on my small 7-inch label, but it was a CDR, and I made maybe 100 copies, 5 songs, the first 5 songs I'd ever recorded, you know, super blown out. I didn't have any idea what I was doing. And so that came out and, you know, existed for a while, and I couldn't believe anybody would buy a burn, you know, I think I sold them for like $3 or something, you know, and it was all, again, like by mail. I didn't play shows. I didn't have a band. You know, the little 7-inch label that I'd started with my husband, our first release was his first 7-inch, and our second release was my CD. So, you know, it was definitely an in the family, you know, don't know how else to get this out there. I guess we'll just do it ourselves sort of thing. And then from that, you know, Hozak wanted to do a 7-inch, so they ended up releasing two of those five songs, plus a Everly Brothers cover, and then Captured Tracks came into the picture, and they, you know, did, I think, one of the five songs, plus three new ones, and, you know, from there, the person who signed me to Sub Pop is a record collector who I think followed Hozak Records and probably got my 7-inch in the mail, and that's so bizarre. You know,
but you see, that's the way. There are still labels like Sub Pop. I mean, I work with big labels and I work with Sub Pop and those kind of labels a lot. And there's still A&R that actually does work that way, where there are people who actually care about the music and aren't counting the, you know, the dollar figures necessarily. So there is a difference there. But, you know, one of the things that is really interesting, and I was listening to the EP on the way here, is, you know, how the sound did progress, because you kind of, you know, you were describing about the vocals, and one of the things I've read you say time and time again, and I feel about this too, is you can be loud, you can have distortion to a certain extent, but then you get somebody like your producer in the house, and he can take that and still keep what you want it to be, but then, I don't want to say clean it up, but still make it sound beautiful without losing any of the energy, right?
I mean, if you had heard the mixes of I Will Be before Richard was involved, they would have sounded a lot like the EP that came out on Captured Tracks. And so with his involvement, I really wanted to take advantage of what I knew he could improve most drastically. I mean, aside from having an engineer who mixed things properly for once, because nothing I'd ever released had been mixed. I mean, like I said, the Dum Dum Girls was really just the learning curve of learning how to write songs and record them. So that made a big difference, you know, putting everything in its place, and then, you know, kind of finessing the vocals and cleaning them up a bit. You know, not so much raising them up volume-wise, and then just using you know, prettier kinds of reverb, not metallic digital reverbs, you know, warmer, sparkling. Yeah. And so that made a big difference on I Will Be. And so when we went in to do this EP, you know, there were pretty significant changes, which were, you know, using an actual studio, not my living room, using a drum set, not a drum machine, using an electric bass, not a guitar, using, you know, the electric guitar I play at shows versus my acoustic that I had just reamped, using proper vocal mics, and you know, working with still a limited amount of resources, but, you know, clearly taking a giant step up in terms of fidelity and figuring out how to still incorporate the loud and the nasty and the fuzzy, and, you know, like the menacing side of things, but also just create that really nice balance with bringing the vocals up even more and clarifying them. And you know, maybe you can actually hear what I'm singing about, because, you know, that is something that I put a lot of effort into. Not, you know, I mean, it's a risk. You know, it feels weird to, especially if you're, you know, I was motivated not just with, you know, sound or genre preferences in it, but also just, you know, these were my first attempts at doing songs. I wasn't wholly ready to, you know, hey, here it is. Like, you know, I burying things a little bit, keeping it washed out was almost like a safety mechanism, or, you know, a little bit of protection. and, you know, he likes to strip that away. I mean, he's done everything. So it's not like he doesn't understand. Like, he's been obsessed with rock and roll since he was a teenager, and he understands the fundamentals and why certain things are appropriate and why they're not. But, you know, he's always, you know, focusing on the voice. You know, like, everything else can go so many different ways, and as long as you have the voice and the melody and you're saying something people can connect with, you know, it's not make or break you know, if the guitars are really distorted, like as long as there can be both, you know, that, and he's done that from, you know, working with girl groups to, I mean, he did the Richard Hell record. I mean, clearly he knows what, you know, where I'm coming from.
That there's this trend again towards the bands are going out of their way because they have the equipment to over distort just for the sake of doing it. And then we all have decided that we're all tired of it already because it's just not really attractive, you know, because you know, it's that old joke when we were kids, we'd say, well, you know, we love that song. We wish we could hear the lyrics.
Well, I mean, there's all sorts. I mean, I not every music that I listen to is, you know, free of extremely distorted guitars and vocals low in the mix. But for me, you know, every release that I've put out was really appropriate for what I was doing at the time. And I continually strive to make improvements. And I could have put out the EP and it could have sounded just like I Will Be. And I could have put out the next record, it could have sounded the same, because I still demo in the same way. And I, you know, now I'm 30 songs under my belt, not six. So I think that, you know, there's been some development in songwriting, and, you know, I'm spreading my influences a little bit. You know, a lot of times people would say with the first stuff, like, oh, Ramones plus Ronettes, like, you know, A plus B equals C. And while I understood that to an extent, like, I hate being pigeonholed as being like a girl group revivalist, or, you know, being just a lo-fi whatever. And for me, I'm like, I've just always wanted to write pop songs, and there's so many different kinds of pop songs, and I'm trying to, you know, stay true to the kind I like, which is rock and roll. And there's like a huge, you know, variety of ways to do that. And so I'm just, you know, taking steps forward within that realm.
If you will, I'd like it. I know that people can read it to a certain extent, but there hasn't been that much press on kind of the vibe behind it at your parents' house.
Well, when I had a couple days off between tours, I was home and you know, I knew that the 2010 was going to be one of those weird years that was really amazing because of all these new things my new band was, you know, being able to do, and also really hard because I was having a lot of issues with my family. And so the songs that came out on He Gets Me High were sort of representative of me latching on to some sort of like mantra of like, this is what's going to get me through, you know, the next 10 months that are going to be awful. And you know, whether it's a person or an idea or just some sort of, you know, abstract faith or hope or whatever, you know, that to me was what this record was about. And it was about latching on to, you know, someone to get you through harder times. And that was where, you know, even the Smiths cover ended up coming into play and being really appropriate for me. Like, if anything else, like the last line of the record is, there's a light that never goes out. And, you know, that was what I wanted to put out for right now, you know, because I knew that it was going to get dark.
And but you know, that brings up the Smiths song. I mean, because again, if people, and the reason I wanted to ask you that story is because I feel it's kind of my job to help people understand why people choose things. And it's going to be so easy. I've already read several journalists, and I have a thing against bloggers in general.
I mean, the EP has leaked at this point, and so, you know, I'm aware to a certain degree that generally, you know, people are, they're surprised and you know, and relatively in favor of it. I know it's a kind of a no-no. I mean, it turned out to be something I felt good about, and I thought it came out special. And like I said, if anything else, you know, if nothing else, it's this, you know, perfect little document of a point in my life, and to have it on, you know.
The new record's in the can. So here you are, you get to tour a little bit, but the new record exists, right?
It exists to a certain degree. Yeah, it's not anywhere near finished, but we did track a lot of songs, and it was a fun experience, and it was another big step forward for us because it incorporated the whole band. And if the EP had not come out, it would have been, you know, a big shock to hear the second record. And so the EP, to me, you know, not only served to, you know, sort of showcase songs that had been written about the last year versus, you know, the last 24 years or whatever. And then, you know, like I said, a progression in sound and fidelity and songwriting, I think. And I think the next record just kind of continues on that as well. You know, we definitely had more time to explore some things that people might be a little surprised about. We went, you know, we have one song in particular that is pretty big, pretty lush, which was a lot of fun because, you know, although that may not come across in what people regard Dum Dum Girls sound as, you know, I'm a huge, huge fan of, like, Spiritualized. It's one of my favorite bands. And so, you know, we definitely brought in a little bit, a little bit more of Ladies and Gentlemen than you might expect on one song in particular. And the others, you know, they are just, I think, more, you know, refined versions of what we do. And I was happy with how they all came out. They, in general, that, you know, it's a pretty up-tempo record. You know, I'd say it's fairly equally distributed between, like, slow, mid, and fast-tempo songs. But it's definitely a very sad and a very dark record.
So what I do is I invented something that over 300 bands have done, and I hope you'll play the game with me for 5 minutes. It's what I call a musical sandwich. And it's two of the songs of yours as the bread, and then you can play anything you want in between.